Shalom, welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel, in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this, all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can reach us at genesis123.co or follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And stay tuned until the end, where we're always, as always, going to offer you an exciting opportunity. And please feel free to share this with others who will be interested as well. So today's conversation came across very quickly. We put it together in about 32 hours. We're recording on Saturday. What day of the week is it? Tuesday night?
Tuesday.
Thank you. Tuesday night, the 14th of October. We just finished the holiday here in Israel, Simchat Torah, the concluding day of Sukkot, Feast of Tabernacles, and preceding the holiday yesterday through late afternoon, when I went offline at least to begin the holiday, we were all engrossed by the news and images of captives finally being released after literally 2 years. In fact, according to the biblical calendar, it was 2 years ago today on the biblical calendar, as we were celebrating the holiday, that the Hamas attack and kidnapping and massacre and everything that began that day took place. So we're literally 2 years from the date. I was reliving that today on a number of levels with friends and family as we celebrated the holiday. And I would say this, some of us were, if you can, mentally even looking over our shoulder, wondering what's happening and what may come yet again. 2 years ago, I was waken up by an air raid sirens with missiles being fired from Gaza. And we had that pretty much on and off for the last 2 years. So it was important to talk about this, as we're seeing 20 living hostages. And if I'm not mistaken, as of now, four people who were killed. So we don't forget of the 28 whose bodies are supposed to come back, and most of them have not. Most of those people were killed in captivity. We need to know that. That's important as they return the bodies and try to cover up their crimes, which have been going on steadily for 2 years. We also saw President Trump arrive just for a few hours in something that was quite remarkable and historic. Trump being himself speaking in the podium of the Knesset yesterday, for what became a very long time. And Israelis like me, myself, who were eager to be preparing for the holiday, were wondering not just when Trump was going to finish, but Netanyahu and the Speaker of the Parliament and the opposition leader who were all speaking. But it was really remarkable. And some other news items went down. So I started texting friends of mine who are here in Israel, asking what are you thinking? You're here at this remarkably historic moment. I think in the history of modern Israel in 77 years, we can count on four hands, five hands, maybe six, the actual historic opportunities that have come, and all of it that came together yesterday. So rather than hearing from me, which we did in a recent conversation and episode, including myself and other Israelis, and you're going to hear from many, I want you, our Christian followers and friends, to hear from other Christians who are here. And we called this program The Christian Friends Experiencing the Redeeming of Captives. And I wrote that specifically because there's a biblical mandate, a biblical obligation. We call it a mitzvah in Hebrew, to redeem captives. And it's something that for literally 2 years, we have been fretting about here in Israel because it's a biblical mandate. I was involved in that in my youth, helping to get Jews out of the Soviet Union, redeeming captives. But there's also something that we learn through rabbinic Judaism is that you can't pay too high a price to redeem captives. And so the question that we as Israelis and Jews have been dealing with for much of the last 2 years is, what's too high a price?
Yeah.
Have we already not experienced that? And at what point? And by paying any price, dollars, release of terrorists, other concessions to terrorists, do we not, in fact, encourage them and embolden them to know that this is something that they can not only get away with, but if we go with a monetary term, make profitable? So I want to welcome my four friends who have joined today, and I want to just jump right in. But let me just introduce everybody alphabetically. Marzia Amirizadeh is the founder of NewPersia.org and co-founder of our wonderful program together, Root and Branch, which is Israel's first olive harvesting pilgrimage that's actually beginning again next week. Marzia was born in Iran. She became a Christian in Iran. She was arrested and sentenced to death for what they call the crime of apostasy. And she's now in Israel for the fourth time, preparing to welcome our Root and Branch team to harvest olives. She's only been coming to Israel since before the war began, so just about 2.5 years now. And I want to not forget, and it's very important to where I want to begin the conversation tonight, I want to encourage everyone to go to her website, marziesjourney.com. I will put that in the comments, and so you can follow it and get her books. Why? Because she has two books that she's published about her faith journey, her testimony, her story, her strength, her time in captivity. And as we celebrate today the release of captives, she's somebody, unfortunately, who knows better than all of us what feelings are being aroused. John Haller is a good friend, a retired lawyer, and now a conference speaker, YouTube host, and pastor, regularly covering geopolitics, technology developments, and things relating to Israel. He's finishing a tour that he's been leading and coming. He's going home for a few days and then coming back again in another week or so for the Christian Media Summit. Dr. Tricia Miller is also here for the Christian Media Summit, but she happened to arrive on Sunday to be here in advance of the release of the hostages. She's the director of CAMRA's Partnership of Christians and Jews. They said she just arrived in Israel on Sunday, and that put her here literally in time, as they all are, to witness the firsthand historic events. Tricia is a long time, been here many, many times for many, many years. She has ordination, and by the way, I'm not going with titles today. We're all going to jump into first names, but Tricia is a good friend who I'm looking forward to seeing in person, and I'm so glad to bring your thoughts and observations. And Irma Robin and I only met for the first time about a week ago and discovered that we've been following each other on social media, but had never met in person. So here she is. She's from Louisiana. She leads an in-house congregation with Tree of Life Ministries. She supports Israel through a variety of projects relating to IDF, Holocaust survivors, schools, and families. And we also discovered that we have mutual friends in common. So hopefully again next week you'll join us to pick some olives, but also hopefully next time I'm in Louisiana, we'll get to meet. So that was a very long introduction. I apologize for that, but I think you all needed it. I mean, needed to set the context. And I just want to thank you for taking time, each of you this evening, to share your thoughts.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm very honored that you invited me to come and join you.
I'm thrilled. Marzia, I want to start with you. I was actually rereading some of your second book today. You're the only one among, I assume, tell me if I'm wrong, amongst us who's been in prison. And again, I'm not, go into your story as much as you want, but I want people to read the books and get to know you and your story through your books. We'll put that in the comments. There are many vivid moments in your story, including being released from Evin prison after 9 months. And you were here your second trip. The war had already started. You met families of hostages and prayed with them. And we visited the Gaza border together, and you were witness to many horrific things. The third trip was our Root and Branch trip, a year ago, and we're hoping to have a reunion with God Sobel, who's the grandfather. It's so emotional even to be able to think it, that his grandsons are now finally released, the grandfather of Zeev and Gil Berman, who were released yesterday. And I can't imagine, today I got to hold my little grandson, can't imagine all any of that. What's going through your head today, Marzi, and yesterday as you were here for all of this? And what can you project after all of the suffering that they've gone through, that they are experiencing now?
So thank you so much for including me in this interview. And thank you so much for your thoughtful introduction. It's a great honor to be on your podcast and to share my opinion. As you know, I strongly believe God connected me from the beginning before October 7th happened, which started with a dream that I shared a few times during my interviews, that how God showed me about October 7th and what is going to happen. And then he took me to Israel and gave me that vision, idea of root and branch to work together. There was a reason from the beginning, and I am very honored that I am here in Israel during this historical moment, time that hostages got released. I didn't know this is going to happen. You know that I decided to come with another Christian group for having a biblical tour. And it was a great honor hearing this message, especially last year, through Root and Branch, that you mentioned that we were praying for God's grandchildren. And it was a big joy, especially for me, that we all together, me and other Christians who joined us, we prayed for him. And it's a great joy that this year we can celebrate their release. And also I wanted to say that I am very grateful of my president, President Trump, that he made this happen, and he made lots of achievement by standing with Israel, supporting Israel, and make this happen, and helped for the hostages to get released, because I understand that how much is difficult for the family members. Honestly, it is more difficult for the family members who are outside. I had the same experience in 2009 when I was in prison, even though my situation was very hard, but for my sister and my family outside was much harder. And I understand that these people, when they get released, that's the beginning of another war for these people. It's inside war, dealing with the traumas, and their view of the life is going to change, because it was the same experience that I had when I come out of prison, experiencing all those traumas, execution of my friends, and the brutal behavior of the regime against prisoners. And these are things that you stays with you for the rest of your life, and you have to learn how to deal with that. And I know for Israeli hostages, which they went through much harder situation being hostages by these savages, terrorists, I know there are inner scars and traumas that invisible scars that people are not able to see that. And I read the news that one of the hostages unfortunately committed suicide. He was released earlier, but he couldn't deal with that. And this is the reality of those people who go through these traumas. And it's a mixed feeling of, for me, when I got released from prison, it was a mixed feeling of joy and bitterness, because of, you know, I have to leave behind many other people that I knew, that they have to continue facing the brutality of the regime. And I think for Israeli hostages and for Israel in general is the same, because there are many bodies that are supposed to come, and still Hamas didn't release all the bodies. And many families are mourning because of losing their loved ones. Many families who their children fight against these terrorists, and they lost their children as soldiers. And I know it's a joy for the families who could meet their children again, but it's still, it's just the beginning. And I understand how difficult is that. And honestly, when I was reading each news, I could not hold my tears. And you know, about the, I don't know if you want me to continue talking about this ceasefire, which, you know, again, it was a kind of bitterness and joy feeling. On one hand, I was so happy hearing the news that these children went back to their families. But you know that I wrote in many of my articles that peace, there is no peace with these terrorists. And we know the head of these terrorists is the Islamic Republic, or Republic regime, and they have lost most of their proxies that Israel and America were able to destroy most of them. And they are feel weak now, but they are buying time. They wanted to survive. And we know that their proxies are active in Western countries. And even though, you know, President Trump mentioned that they destroyed nuclear sites in Iran, but I always said that the bigger danger is not nuclear weapon. It's ideology, is the propaganda that they are spreading all around the world in Western countries, is brainwashing, is a deep ideology that peace to them means destruction of Israel. Peace to them is not just, you know, ending the war. They are not unhappy about losing people, because people to them is just tools. And I strongly believe Palestine and Palestinian is just a project to these terrorists, and they are just buying time to survive and to rebuild, to restrength, and coming back. And I think the total victory is when we destroy these terrorists, which the Islamic Republic regime is the head of them, to eliminate this evil regime forever.
Thank you, Marzi. This year, you can join Christian leaders from around the world who are lining up to participate in Root and Branch, the newest hands-on, meaningful, and incredibly tangible way for Christians to make a personal connection to Israel, the Israeli people, and to be a blessing to the people and nation which is still suffering from the trauma of a horrific terrorist attack and war. Root and Branch offers unique comfort and a vision of peace, with tangible material benefits to Israelis who have suffered the trauma of war, specifically in and around the Gaza border area. Root and Branch is a unique agricultural pilgrimage. You will harvest wild olive trees in communities along the Gaza border that were devastated by the October 7, 2023 terrorist attack and massacre. In these communities and elsewhere, we will plant deep and lasting roots among Israelis of all backgrounds, making Root and Branch all the more innovative. Since the war began, more than $50 million in crops have been saved by volunteers. Root and Branch is the first such initiative to harvest olives. Proceeds from the olive oil that's being made will directly benefit these devastated communities, making Root and Branch a critical and significant project to bless Israel economically and spiritually in multiple ways. Root and Branch is a partnership between the Genesis 123 Foundation and NewPersia.org. For information, videos, and media about the experience, dates, pricing, and how you can register, please visit rootandbranchisrael.com. Irma, we've never had this kind of conversation before, because we only met last week, and I've had John and Tricia on before, so I want to jump to you. What are your thoughts? What did you see? Where were you? What were your thoughts and observations as this was all going down yesterday?
Well, yes, we were here. We chose to just stay home and rest, but we were glued to the TV, of course. And the night before, I was waking up constantly, checking my phone just to make sure. You know, the anticipation was definitely there, because until we saw them actually in the hands of Israel back, you know, in their borders, you just don't ever know what's going to happen. And so the anticipation was very high, very high. Just constantly praying, making sure that, you know, just wanting to see that moment. And when we finally began to see the hostages, you know, being embraced by their families, of course, you know, you can't help it, but you feel all those emotions, because, you know, you've been for 2 years, you knew that, you know, the conditions they were having to live in. We saw on television, you know, was it Ibi Natan, or I can't.
Avi Natan, yes.
Yes. And that was just heartbreaking. When I saw that, that's when I really just, it became very real to me, you know, that what they were experiencing. And so to be here during the time when they were talking about possibly being released anywhere between Sunday to Tuesday, and knowing that I was going to be here during this time, you know, during the 2 years of war, we began right away. We're a small congregation, but we began right away seeding into the IDF in whatever way we could help. You know, whether it was helping to buy medical supplies for them the gentlemen that take care of the wounded, whether it was supplying coats for the soldiers, supplying, you know, whatever we could, whatever my friend Sam would call me and say, there's a need for this, you know, can you help? We were there. We were there for 2 years, because we understand. I mean, as believers, we understand that, you know, Israel is our big brother. And when they're hurting, we're hurting with them. And so for me to be here at this time, I really felt like it was a very prophetic time, even though I really was not. I was scheduled to be here in June for a wedding, for my friend's daughter's wedding. But that had to be canceled because of everything that was going on with Iran. But, you know, again, we know that, you know, we make our plans, but it's the Lord who orders our steps. And the Lord just knew that I had to be here during this time. And I think it's because he knows my heart towards Israel. And so he made sure that I was here at this time. And it was a very, you know, it was just a very emotional, you know, personal time for us here. And again, feeling the same way that peace, what does that mean here in the Middle East, you know, and how long? We're already hearing today. I don't know if you know that, but today the IDF had to shoot down three terrorists that had crossed the line and were headed towards the buffer line that the IDF, and they tried to, you know, just shoot warning shots at them, and they weren't backing up. So the helicopter, IDF helicopter, had to shoot them down. So again, how long is this peace going to last?
Well, it's a misnomer to call it peace.
Yeah.
It's not peace. It's Marzi used the word. It's a ceasefire. It's a hostage exchange release. It's a release of terrorists. Just before we began, I also was in touch with a friend of mine, Tal Hartuv, who was a tour guide, but she was also a victim of a terror attack 15 years ago. And her friend, Kathleen Lucan, who was a Christian woman from America, was killed. And Tal, and one of the two terrorists, at least, who stabbed them, Kathleen to death, Christine Lucan, excuse me, to death, and Tal, thank God she survived, has now been released. So we're not anticipating peace. And I'll just amplify my personal thought. And I think, Tricia, you nodded to it. I'm going to come to you next. What Marzi said is that ultimately it's the Islamic regime and they're the ideological funders. It's Qatar, it's Turkey, it's the ideology. Tricia, you thought you were coming here for a few days of R&R first, but you also, like Irma just said, landed at a really remarkable time. What were your observations yesterday? I assume you weren't walking on the beach.
No, I wasn't. I haven't been to the beach yet. That's okay. That's all right. But I did get a hotel on the beach because I was intending to have a couple days off. I came from a very intense week of meetings in London that was all work related. I work for CAMRA, which is a media monitoring organization, monitoring everything that goes on in the Middle East, in the news about the Middle East, and specifically Israel. Obviously, it's mostly Jewish people who work there. But as a Christian, I monitor everything going on in the Christian world. So there was a Christian media conference in London, as well as many other things. So that was all day Friday. The Christian media conference was the end of my week. And of course, I couldn't fly to Israel on Shabbat, because you can't fly to Israel on Shabbat. So my flight was scheduled for Sunday. So I got here Sunday and heard, you know, well, we heard on Friday, you know, that this agreement has been signed. I'm only referring to it, and I've been writing about it. I'm calling it an agreement. It's a U.S. brokered agreement between Israel and Hamas. Yes, there's some other countries involved. And yes, President Trump says lots of nice things, you know, about all the other leaders involved, because he is being diplomatic and he does work with people well. And he is he likes to build a team. But I think we all know that I think of all the people who gathered in Egypt, probably President Trump's the main one who's really, really working for peace. The other people there haven't done a lot. But be that as it may, we had this agreement signed on Friday. So we knew it was going to happen in the next few days. And so the hotel I'm in, because I was going to take a couple days off before going to Jerusalem, is on the beach. And I woke up Monday morning to look out my window, and right below where I am is where that sign is that they put on the beach, right, welcoming him. And then I saw, and then I heard that Air Force One was going to fly, you know, along the beach. So I waited and I saw Air Force One fly. So that was the beginning of yesterday. Just very, you know, unbelievable to me that I was here. You know, I'm kind of like pinching myself. Am I really here, you know, with this happening? And so then after that, after I got to see Air Force One go by, then I went to Hostage Square. Oh. And it was packed, obviously. And they had on the big screen there, if you've all seen it, I'm sure, they had President Trump live speak when he was at the Knesset speaking. And yes, he spoke for a long time, but it was very good. What he said was very good. But just to be in the midst of that sea of people and feel the emotion is something that, you know, I would have never been able to grasp really any other
Describe
way.
Describe that, Patricia, would you? I mean, that's remarkable to have been there. I can't think of another, you know, maybe the image of Times Square on V Day, right? That maybe, but what was it? Emotional. What were you seeing? What were you experiencing?
This was more complex. This is more complex than V-Day, because yes, there's all of the extreme joy at the release of the living hostages, but there's all of the complexities that accompany all this at the same time. We know this is not permanent peace. We know that Hamas is gonna break the rules. As Irma said, we didn't know until we actually see them, you know. We didn't know if even at the last minute if those living hostages would get out yesterday. And now we're supposed to have seen 28 bodies. They've released 4. And now they're saying, well, you know, we don't know where the rest are. They're coming up with excuses already. Thank God they didn't do that with the living hostages. But we knew that they would come up with something. And they did have an attempted attack on IDF forces that they had to take out today. So I don't even know if we're going to see all the 28 bodies. I do have a friend in the IDF who told me he's not sure they really can find them because of all the rubble. They may not actually be able to find them, but I'm not believing Hamas when they say that. So so there was that complexity at Hostage Square yesterday of all these emotions of the joy, but the exhaustion. You can also feel the exhaustion, the emotional, physical, spiritual exhaustion in Israelis from having lived through this for 2 years. So yes, it was joyful, but there's also this knowing that it's not over yet.
Right. That's the feeling that was over my holiday meals and with friends. And as I held my 6-week-old grandson today, I think you felt that all very correctly. I'm so engaged in what you were saying. I wanted to ask you a follow up, but I don't remember. We'll come back to it. John, you're also no stranger. You've been here a number of times, and you're still in the midst, the tail end of leading a group here. I'd love to know your thoughts and your experiences being here, but also I got to meet your group briefly almost a week ago and spoke with them as we were anticipating this. But what's the feeling with your group? What did you do yesterday with your group that was different to, if anything, to embrace this historic moment?
Well, we've had an interesting week. We flew in last Tuesday on Sukkot, and the traffic was great coming from the airport. it was like a miracle. But on the way in, I don't know if I told you this, we had an encounter with what the flight attendants told me. There was never an announcement. It was a hostile aircraft.
Oh.
And we made 4 attempts to land at Ben Gurion. We covered the entire country. I told them this was part of the tour, that they could see all. But we went from Gaza to the Galilee and from the Mediterranean to the Jordan River Valley. And, you know, it kept resetting at 15 minutes and we get down, he'd pull up. And these were clearly evasive maneuvers. I'm not sure what was going on. The flight attendants looked nervous. They actually came back to one group on the plane and asked them, are you Christians? Or would you please pray?
Wow.
And they also told me that they were talking with on the intercom with the pilots about diverting the flight to Athens. So we finally landed. But I set this trip up a long time ago, or over the last 6 months. And I wanted to make it a little bit different than the usual Christian tour. So one of the things that I set up with Donna, my tour operator, was I wanted to go to Gaza. As you know, when I was here at the meeting.
To the border. You didn't get in Gaza.
I meant to the Gaza envelope. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We had gone to the Gaza envelope. If you remember back, I don't know if you were on the tour that day with the Christian Media Summit. We went down to some of the kibbutzim, like Niram and some others along the border.
Before
the war, 10 months. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we didn't think anything like this was going to happen. I remember the day it happened. I remember my phone literally blowing up around midnight with all kinds of, you know, texts and information and alerts. But I wanted to go back down to see what was there. So we went to Far Aza. 68 people were killed there, 18 hostage. And at the time we were there, there were still 2 done. And I don't want to belabor the point, but I think it's important because the one thing that I've always found when I'm in Israel is a connection. I think I said I prayed at the end of your podcast the other day, that there was this historical, theological, biblical, geopolitical, and prophetic connection with everything that we did for the first few days here. So we went to Far Aza, we went to Nova, we went up to Sutter Road and met at the grave of the first police officer killed in Sutter Road with his widow, because I wanted to talk to the people. We went to Nova. There were families there that we could talk to. There were thousands of people down there on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we went to Hebron, and we went to Machpelah, of course. And then, but then we walked down King David Street to the Hadassah House, where the 1929 Hebron Massacre has a museum and memorial, and where some of the people were killed. And what we saw at Far Aza and what we saw at the museum there at the Hadassah House in Hebron was that they were the same. The provocation was exactly the same. The Jews were going to destroy Al-Aqsa. But it was in the midst of a giant party, and, you know,
the celebration of Sukkot, right.
40,000 Orthodox Jews
right.
at the Tomb of the Patriarchs that day. And then we went over to Gush Etzion, where we saw you after we'd come out from the video there. And it was the same story over again. And then the other day we went up to Sunday, we went up to Jacob's Altar.
So wait, John, let me just interrupt, because I want to get a sense of the pulse of your group yesterday. And what was going on?
Yeah, so as we're looking at this yesterday, we were in the old city doing different things. And, you know, I think everybody is having a little bit of trouble grasping the gravity of the situation. I mean, I think I am too, even though I'm here and I'm not, you know, at home in the United States. My president was here. As I'm walking around the old city, I've got my phone out. I'm listening to a speech and Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech. And I just think that I think there's mixed feelings. Everyone is so glad that the live hostages have come home. We still feel for the pain of the families who've not had the bodies released. That's very important to them. But we also have this, I don't know how to describe it, sort of a sense of, I have, and I think many of my group have, a sense of impending doom as to what this means. And you know, it's in the context, we went down to the Nehemiah thing at the City of David, and we saw this great story. And, you know, if you read Nehemiah, it talks about the captives coming back, and we built booths and everything. So I guess what I'm just trying to say is, the connection to everything, you know, prophetic, historical, theological, is just a bit overwhelming at the moment. So we're so glad that the hostages are home, but we know this is not over.
Overwhelming, I think, is a good word. Tricia used complex. Yeah. By the way, Tricia, I remembered, just to interject, I remembered something that you had said, talking about only four of the hostage bodies yesterday. Apparently, in about an hour and a half, four more are supposed to be released. I have my own inside source on that.
Good.
Yeah. You were going to say something?
Well, then there'll still be 20 more.
Still 20
after
more.
That
Correct.
Court.
Correct.
And it is a very painful situation. And that's what I felt. You know, I can't really even put into words the intensity of emotions that I felt yesterday by being immersed in that crowd, in that press of people, and even as, you know, just trying to move around and see different things in different parts, it was very hard to move. That's how densely that square was filled up.
Yeah.
But I was very moved by the number of American flags and by the love for President Trump and the appreciation for America. And he really has done something that no other president could have ever pulled off, I think.
Indeed. And hopefully it will be for good in the long term. And by the way, that's something we all need to pray for. But I think we're all discussing the skepticism that this can really, it's not peace and what it will really be.
It's not peace, but we got living hostages back. And President Trump has not put any restriction on Israel for following through if Hamas breaks the rules. So
yeah, that, I mean, that's a good point, but I've been wondering more than rhetorically, that's very nice for that to be articulated, but that doesn't, as he is trying to encourage the terrorist leaders of the world who are part of this agreement, Qatar and Egypt and excuse me, I didn't, that was a Freudian slip, Qatar and Turkey, but I included Egypt because you have the president of Egypt who for the first time since 1977 has referred to Israel as an enemy. So I'm a little bit hesitant on that, and also knowing how much weapons that they let smuggle in.
The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance to create an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anybody for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today. The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance, creating an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anyone for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today.
I want to turn, Tricia and John, you more deal with media. Marzi, you've written a number of articles and follow the broader Middle East more than I think any of us because of your background. But I'd love to know what in the last, what is it now, 24, 40, 36, 40 hours, even 48 hours, as you've seen reports in the, I assume we're all following U.S. media. I don't know about other global media. What are the biggest misrepresentations? Marzi, I actually thought of you this evening. One of the really, I don't know if you read about it, but one of the really horrific things is Christiane Amanpour on CNN said that average Gazans were treated worse than the hostages that they just released. Marzi, I want Marzi and Tricia, since you're not professional media people, Marzi and Irma, to comment first on what have you seen in the media?
I think for me, what comes to mind is the parallel similarity that they're making between the 20 living hostages that were released compared to the hundreds of terrorists, making the same similarities or putting them, like comparing them in the same vein of suffering and to me that is just like a slap in the face in a sense. trying to convince the world that, you know, the terrorist prisoners that are being released have suffered as much or worse than, you know, than the hostages that were, you know, released. And that to me was just like, who in the right mind in the world now can believe that? Only those that choose to believe the lie. That's it. That's it. You know,
Marzi, when I asked the question, I realized you have two perspectives. It's not just, but you've been on this really crazy schedule with the tour. You also follow Persian media and social media. What maybe even more than your observations, although anything you want, what are Iranians saying about this?
You know, I was in a tour. I didn't have much time. I was very busy with my tour, but I checked the news. But you mentioned something about Christian Amanpour. I just wanted to say, it is such a big shame that someone like her that is have a Persian background saying such a terrible thing, a big lie. That means she's ignoring the suffering of Iranian people since 1979, that the Iranian regime come to power and killed hundreds of thousands of Iranian people, put them in prison. But her platform only belonged to the killers, not those people, the victims and people like me, that to share what this evil regime to Iranian people. And I'm sure you know that after the 12 days war with Iran, the Islamic Republic regime increased arresting Iranian people, putting hundreds of them in prison, especially Christians. They raided their home churches, arrested many Christians, put them in prison and charged them with spying, because that's the way that they can kill people, execute them. Through my case, when they arrested me and my friend, they charged us with apostasy, which the world put lots of pressure on them to release us. And they learned a lesson. And since then, they arresting lots of Christians and charged them with disrupting national security and anti-government activities. But I read the news today that just prison is went to strike because of they almost every day they are taking tens of people for execution. And especially after 12 war, the regime started putting pressure on an Iranian, and they changed the definition of espionage in order to arrest Iranians and anyone who said some things in supporting Israel. Because as you know, majority of Iranians are the big supporter of Israel. And they love Israel. They don't have any problem with Israel. And the Iranian regime knows that their biggest enemy are Iranian people. That's why they try to create terror and fear. But about this, what's happening regarding releasing the hostages, we need to know that while the Hamas terrorists releasing a few of Israeli hostages, but in return, Israel has to return 2,000 over about 2,000 terrorists. And we need to know that while they are just releasing a few hostages, the whole above 80 million Iranians are hostages by the Islamic Republic regime, and they are trying to suppress people, kill people.
Good comment.
Yeah, that's very disappointing, especially for Iranian people, because they are seeking the elimination of this regime. And people like me, there are 100,000s of Iranians like me that we have the scars from this evil regime, these savages that spreading terrorism all around the world. And the war is not finished for us. I'm not a soldier to kill anyone, but until my last breath, I'm not going to stop fighting against this regime. And the Western people need to understand, I mentioned earlier, that peace to these savages, to these terrorists, means destruction of Israel, means destroying other people of faith, elimination of other people of faith. And this is not what my word. Yasser Arafat said such a thing. I think it was after Camp David in 2020 or after Oslo Accord that Israel accepted to give Palestinians some land. But he mentioned that peace means the destruction of Israel. And to these people, Western people must understand, must wake up and understand that peace to radical Muslims and to these terrorists doesn't have any meaning. Except destroying the state of Israel, because this is deep in their ideology and their teachings. And they believe that Islam must dominate the whole world. And they are doing that is not just through their proxies and creating wars. But, you know, we know that what happened after October 7th, that in all Western countries, they have their proxies, their exported proxies that infiltrated in politics, in different system in Western countries in order to spread lies and propaganda and overthrow and destroy the Western civilization and our values, our Christian, Judeo-Christian values.
Marzi, I wanted to stick with you just for a moment and then go to John and Tricia. But I don't know if you saw it or heard it or even know about it. But when he spoke yesterday, it wasn't the first time, but President Trump mentioned something in Jerusalem about him believing that the Iranians are also going to make peace. What are your, quickly, I don't, we're not a whole dialogue. We can have that separately. I get the smile and head shake probably says it all, but what are your thoughts on that? And on him saying,
you know what, the Iranian regime lost most of their proxy members and IRGC terrorists that, you know, during 12-day wars, Israel targeted them and destroyed most of them. That's why that's their kind of policy, their game to be flexible right now, because they know how politics work in America, in Western country, and they are trying to be more flexible in order to buy more time to survive, because they know that, you know, after waiting for another 4 years presidency, maybe, you know, Democrats again come back to power and they will have a different situation. So this is just a deception that they never seek peace. And I read the news in Farsi. Sometimes it's difficult for me to explain it in English, but a few of the Ayatollahs were saying that it doesn't matter, you know, the situation we need. They don't want to show hard objection to what's happening because they needed that. But they need, as I mentioned, they only need to buy more time and to wait, because there are hard sanctions against them, and you're putting America is putting lots of pressure on the regime, and they have to cooperate to some extent. But as I mentioned, on the other hand, they are increasing killing Iranian people and increasing execution and create fear and terror to make sure there is no uprising. But the solution, the only solution, is to eliminate the Islamic Republic regime. And we know that Qatar is the home of Hamas terrorists. Turkey is supporting them, and they are trying to make a Islamic state maybe in Syria, just beside the state of Israel, to be prepared for future. And this is not just a physical war. To me, this is a spiritual war that have started, you know, from the time of Ishmael, and it will continue to the last time that we live on this earth, unfortunately.
Jonathan, can I just add something to what Marcy said about the deception? A Qatari official said today that Hamas is considering that they might like to make peace with Israel. Now, we know, again, I mean, everything Marzi just said applies to that situation as well.
Correct. Something you said, Marzi, thanks for expanding on that, Tricia. Something you just said, Marzi, made me remember to find your article from the Jerusalem Post this summer when you were writing to the soldiers who had, to the Air Force, who had targeted the Iranian Evan prison specifically. So I've posted that in the chat for anyone who wants. Tricia, John, I don't feel bound by it, but you're both deal in media on a much regular basis, Tricia, all the time. What are your observations in terms of misrepresentations that maybe haven't been said?
I'll be quick, John. To me, the most startling thing, but it's not a surprise, but the most blatant thing, I guess, since this agreement has been reached and the hostages have been released and the world is saying, oh, we now have peace, and we've discussed that enough. The most blatant thing to me is the omission of what is not being said, because ever since October 8th, the world has been in uproar saying that Israel's committing genocide, even before the IDF even went into Gaza. All of a sudden, Israel was committing genocide and creating a famine. And we have been fighting those lies and those blood libels of genocide and creating famine for 2 years. And they're obviously blatant lies. And all of a sudden, nobody's commenting on it. When we see the videos of the thousands and thousands of Gazans streaming back north, because now they can go back to Gaza City, and we've seen all the trucks. We have the numbers. We have the videos. We have the facts of how much food has gone into Gaza ever since the war started. There's no famine. Those pictures that they were showing of, several children that they showed, of children who were supposedly starved, they had other conditions. Now, you'd think if there was any starving child in Gaza, they could have found a real picture of one. They can't. They can't, because guess what? They're not. There have been some food shortages, but that's because Hamas has taken control of the food. That's another story, and I want to give John time. But that's been the most blatant thing to me, is that everybody's all of a sudden quiet. There's no genocide. If Israel wanted to commit a genocide, they could have carpet bombed Gaza a long time ago. Instead, they do the opposite. We all know that.
Or if Israel was indifferent to human suffering there, not even attempting to commit a genocide, but if we had gone in and not put our soldiers at risk to go in over the last 2 years, that could have been done. Yeah.
Well, there's the lowest ratio of civilian casualties to combatant casualties, far lower than any other war ever in the world.
Correct.
Ever in the world. We have military experts that have given us those. John Spencer and others have given us those facts and figures, because the IDF warns the people to get out of the way before they're going to attack. What army gives away all element of surprise? Right. But they do. They do.
Thanks. John, what are you seeing in the media? A lot's been covered, but what's generally in the last 2 years, but or specifically in the last 48 to 72 hours?
So I'm a political person as well as a pastor, and so I do pay attention to media of all kinds, but I would call a right-wing media in America. And I will tell you, that's why I want to come to the media summit, because we are in the midst of the most sophisticated, evil, demonic propaganda war that, and I'm 71 years old, that I have ever seen in my life.
Well,
it is almost impossible now in America to distinguish between the left-wing Jew hatred and the right-wing Jew hatred. And the narrative is always spun. There are hundreds of examples of this, some of which the other panelists have correctly pointed out. But everything is spun the wrong way. And the one thing that's being spun, and I think Marzi would be interested in this, all day long, my right-wing media feed, my X feed, is a sewer of Jew hatred, and it's pro-Iranian. As soon as anything comes up, there is a massive, coordinated propaganda response to everything to make it anti-Israel. It is unbelievable. I've interviewed people like Trevor Loudon and others about this. The Red Green Alliance, it's active, it's there. And the one thing that I've noticed, when I was a trial lawyer, I was in business on Washington the day that Oslo was signed. And I have seen this pro-Iranian thread through every single administration in the United States. And I will just say this. I had a, it was in the old city yesterday with a young Christian. It got very loud very quickly as he told me that I did not understand Islam.
A Christian telling you that you didn't understand Islam?
A 24-year-old Christian telling me that I did not understand the law, Islam, and everything is resulting from the Israeli occupation of Judea and Samaria. I mean, this is so shocking to me. Let me use the example. So yesterday or Sunday, we went up to Joshua's altar. We were at Nablus. I've been there before. The volume of new, nice new apartment buildings built throughout Samaria and Judea in Arab areas is shocking. The one thing that we noticed coming back after dark was that in all of those villages where we saw these new apartments going up, there were no lights in any single window anywhere. And I've told people in Jerusalem about this over the last 24 hours, and they look at me like you're a product of some kind of propaganda operation. I'm not. They are. And it's very difficult as a Christian to maintain some sort of dignity, because it really makes me angry, because there is a consequence to this. And Jonathan, I've traveled around the United States down to Dallas recently to speak. This is all over America too. And one of my tour members yesterday, we were looking at security fence, and we know what's going on in America. And the question was, I thought this was a profound question. Is this what America is going to look like soon?
Well,
on October 7th, 2023, Israel and the Jewish people suffered a massacre and calamity of unprecedented proportion, the largest number of Jews killed in one day since the Holocaust. That this is even something that we even measure is harrowing. Since then, the Jewish people have never felt more alone, in Israel and around the world. It brings us back to when 6 million of us were murdered in the Holocaust, and few rose to protect us. However, those who did, the righteous among the nations, can never be forgotten. They serve as a beacon of light for us today and for future generations. Footsteps was born in the wake of this most recent calamity to give you the opportunity to walk in the footsteps of the righteous among the nations, the righteous Gentiles. Footsteps is a boutique travel experience with a personal touch. You will experience stories of the righteous among the nations, their descendants, of the Jews they saved, and the generations that came from them. Through this, you'll be inspired to follow in their footsteps to inspire new generations of righteous among the nations, especially today when so much of the world is embracing overt anti-Semitism. In a generation where standing up for Israel and the Jewish people is no longer something to be taken for granted, stories of the righteous among the nations call out to us, inspire us, and are models for today and for our next generations. Please join us and get more information at genesis123.co.
It's absolutely shocking to me. And so the pro-Trump right-wing MAGA media is completely, whether you realize it or not, here in Israel, it's completely gone. The narrative is constant from both right and left in America. Yeah. And it's difficult to impossible to distinguish between which side of the political aisle it's coming from. It's the same thing everywhere.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, John, because over lunch today, you know, I'm the only Jewish person that most of my friends know who work on, have such close relationships as I do with so many Christians. And some were asking today, they were asking why there's a proclivity among some who appear to be supportive of Israel. I'm not talking about Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens and other rabid people on the right, but true Israel supporters to still employ anti-Semitic tropes. And I needed to explain that some people don't understand the difference and they don't know why there are problematic statements, even things that are most, that to us are most vivid. And so what you just observed is correct, because most of us don't know here. And it's, and I said to them, but it's with tremendous integrity and importance that people like you are calling out, people who are solid conservatives are also calling out people who claim to be conservative and are as anti-Israel. I want to wrap up, begin to wrap up. And I'm going to just kind of ask an open-ended question and go in reverse order. You can each think about what you want to say. And hopefully, Scott Carpenter will be joining us to close in prayer. But here's the thing. You're all here. It is a remarkable historic period. What is what that we haven't already discussed is the thing, the one thing that you saw, that you understand now from being here this week, that you want the rest of the world to know and understand that they probably don't. John, we did you in reverse order, so I'm going to start with you.
I think that as I talk to some of my friends about what's going on, again, we are happy that the hostages, the live hostages, have been released. We are extremely distressed that, Jonathan, we talked about this in Gush Etzion the other day with our group. There are 100 or more Palestinian terrorists being released into neighborhoods. Somebody today said, oh, well, they're all going to Gaza. No, they're not. They're going to Jerusalem. They're going to Gush Etzion. They're going to the areas and the villages around you. And I do not know exactly how to deal with this, because here's the thing. We're happy, but we know from the Bible, from prophetic scriptures, that with what appears to be peace, I hear people calling it peace, it's not peace, there's a massive deception that's going on and coming on many levels. And we need to prepare our own personal minds and hearts about that, and the minds and hearts of those that we have influence over, because it is going to be on a scale that we cannot imagine.
You're for those following, you're getting a lot of head nodding from your co-panelists. Thank you for that. Tricia, what's the one thing that people who don't know that you're seeing, that you're experiencing here?
Again, I want to go back to the word I used before, the complexity. In contrast to the end of World War II, when it was a complete victory and the enemy completely surrendered, we don't have that in this case. The complexity of this and this Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot, which is supposed to be, it's commanded that the Jews are to rejoice. It is a happy, it's a joyous festival. This year, it started on October 7th. So again, we're on the Gregorian calendar. It was on October 7th. And so again, the complexity of the Jews are supposed to rejoice, but everybody, the Jewish people and all of us who care, everybody's also marking that second anniversary since the first October 7th, 2 years ago. And so then on the other side, we're living what we're seeing this week, I think, is prophetic. That John mentioned Nehemiah very briefly earlier, but that the people who came back from exile built the temporary shelters and dwelled in them, and they had that festival. They celebrated the festival for 7 days. And so that happened this week. Before Sukkot was over, the hostages came back. And they came back the day before Simchat Torah, which on the Hebrew calendar then was the second anniversary. And so, I mean, you can't make this up. It's divinely orchestrated. It's prophetic. And as Christians, you know, everybody listening, I just would plead with everybody to be in touch with that, to understand what's going on the spiritual level. This is a spiritual war. and to be in touch with that, understand that, and understand that the complexities of what the Jewish people and the Israelis are dealing with, the joy of the living hostages released, countered by the uncertainty about the future, knowing that this is not over, knowing that there's not peace, but not knowing exactly what's going to happen next.
Yeah. Thank you, Tricia. Irma, what your bird's eye view for everyone?
Yes. You know, the scriptures tell us, especially in the Brit Hadashah, that blindness has come upon the Jews for a season until the Gentiles come in, right? The number of Gentiles that are supposed to come in. But for me personally, what I see, especially what I see when I come here, and then I go back and I try to educate Christians who are, as our brother said, that are supposed to be Christians but are very anti-Semitic, or have an indifference towards the Jewish people and the Jewish state, I feel like the same blindness that the scriptures tell us that have come, the partial blindness upon the Jews until the fullness of the Gentiles come in, by the same token, a blindness has come upon the Gentile believers concerning their connectedness to Israel, to the Jewish people. And because of that, that's where the anti-Semitism comes in, because they read their Bibles, but they're not reading it as a Jewish document, a Jewish history, and how, you know, in the Tanakh, especially the prophets, they all speak about the reconnecting, God bringing Israel, his people, back into the land and being here with them, even though, you know, not breaking his covenant with the Jewish people, even though the Jewish people have, you know, scripturally speaking, have not kept their covenant with him. He has not broken his covenant with the Jewish nation. Okay. Now, another thing is that we must understand that no matter how much we talk about, you know, the ceasefire, the peace, and I know our president would love, you know, to see peace around the world. We all would love to see it. We know what the scriptures teach us is that as time comes to an end, all the nations of the world are going to come against Israel. And we must understand that no matter how much we want to see this come to fruition, we know, those of us who read our Bibles from Genesis to Revelation, we know that that is not going to be possible. The only time that that will be possible for the Jews is when their Messiah appears, right? Not Ben Yosef, but Ben David. For the Christians is when the Messiah returns. And so to come here and to see and experience the land, experience, you know, everything, Sukkot, what we just finished experiencing here, seeing the release of these captives and knowing that just in these last Torah portions in the book of Deuteronomy that we've been reading, how it just speaks so much, the books of the prophets, the half Torah portions, speak so much about the captives, right? And how as you know, Israel went into rebellion and idolatry, how the Lord said to them, you will be dispersed, but from wherever you're dispersed, when you cry out to me, I will come and rescue you. All of these things we seem to forget as Christians, as believers, And I find that more alarmingly more in the younger generation of Christians, which is where I'm involved in re-educating, in a sense, the younger Christians about their connectedness to the land and to the people of Israel.
Thanks, Irma. Yeah, and anything I can do to help. I mean, I've already written our mutual friend asking him when I can come visit in Louisiana, so I'll look forward to seeing you then. Marzi, we started with you. What's the thing that you want the world who's not here now to know about what's been happening in the last 24, 48 hours and in general the last 2 years?
I just wanted to say, John mentioned about the deception among, left-wing and unfortunately right-wing conservative, and the enemy understood that the big supporter of Jewish people, Israel, are Christians, and they try to create that division. And my passion is to create this unity among Christians and Jews, because Israel is the land of my Savior, and it's my spiritual home. And until I'm alive, I never stop supporting Israel. And Christians need to understand why this unity is very important. When I had the tour with a group of Christians, I told them that they learned a lot about the biblical places and the footsteps of Jesus. I told them what you take with you is not just the information in your mind, it's what you take in your heart. And that's important when you go back to share this message with people and to wake up more Christians, why it's important not just to come and to have a tour and visit Israel, but to understand why this unity, especially at this time that the enemies keep working so hard to spread these propagandas and destroy our Judeo-Christian values, to be united. And as someone that was born in Iran, I continue supporting Israel to restore this friendship, because this is the will of millions of Iranians. And hopefully one day Iran in the Middle East is going to be one of the biggest supporter of Israel in the future. Yes. That's my hope and prayer.
Thank you, Marzi. You know, folks, I thought this would be a clever conversation to get your input. I think it's really one of the most important with all of you. I've taken away so many, and I want to come back and listen and write about it. And I'm very grateful, really, really grateful for the four of you for joining. Just before we wrap up, and I'm hoping maybe Scott Carpenter will be able to join, there were just a couple of comments on the program I wanted to share for those who are not seeing it. Susan Smith, thank you for sharing that Israel's not going to open the Rafah crossing and limiting aid until the remains of the dead hostages are released. Thank you for sharing that. I had seen that, but it's important to note. And the last thing, Jane in New Zealand, thanks for the comment about why you wrote some hostage families have a similar virulent hatred, similar to what people hate President Trump, of Prime Minister Netanyahu. How is this addressed? Well, I'm not going to address it in depth now. And I would say it's not only a function of the hostage families. Certainly the hostage families, people who have sacrificed so much personally over the last 2 years. I think we would maybe fairly describe them in a parallel to people who are in mourning. And even though they weren't in mourning, some were, but the seeing that the prime minister and the government and the army failed them and their loved ones 2 years ago, and haven't done enough, or perhaps were conflating their doing work with on behalf of the hostages and to end this current combat with political things, which existed before the war. I've been on record now. I believe that we're, while a formal election has not been called, I think we're in that pre-election season. that will happen. It's going to happen sooner than later. But it's a very complex answer as to why. So on that note, I just want to thank you again, Scott. I'm getting your text messages that you're not able to join. So we will give you a rain check on that. And I just want to thank everybody. Thank you all for taking time tonight. Those of you who are here in Israel and those who are following from, I don't know what time of day it is in New Zealand, but my goodness, I appreciate that. As we just wrap up, as I always do in our webinars and podcasts, to encourage you to continue to share and follow Inspiration from Zion. We have a program called From Jonathan's Bookshelf every month for the last four years, most of the last 200 episodes. We've offered a free book as an incentive to like, comment, or share the link to this program. And for the last 2 years since we published our book, Israel the Miracle, it's been that. So all I encourage you to do is like, comment, or share the link to this program with other people. When we see that, we pick one person at random every month to receive a free copy of our beautiful book, Israel the Miracle. It's a $75 value. Very big, very beautiful. Oh, I feel like I'm President Trump now. Very big, very beautiful, and very heavy. So we hope you'll get a copy. We're always grateful that the podcast is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. And if you're ever in the area, I don't know that anyone's ever done this, but pop in and thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And also special thanks to the Coyne family for your meaningful sponsorship and friendship. Inspiration from Zion and all of the Genesis 123 Foundation programs are made possible by donations. So please consider joining us to help continue building bridges and have conversations like this. I have the privilege as host, and since this was put together so quickly, we didn't have a sponsor but just that this should be in honor of all of the hostages who've come home, their families who've suffered so much, and those who are still waiting for the remains of their loved ones, that they should please come home soon. President Trump said, buried here in their land, and everyone should have healing and closure, and we can begin at least to get into the post-trauma of the trauma that we've been living for the last 2 years. If you'd like to sponsor episode in honor of memory of a loved one or special occasion, please feel free to be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. And as always, we'd love to hear your comments about anything, specifically about topics relating to traditional Judaism that you might want to hear in our Ask the Rabbi programs. So please be in touch. Please do share this with others who will also find it of interest, and continue to join us right here as we bring you more meaningful conversations about unique topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains.